All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. I was supposed to be trying to do an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, but I can't really do it. But I am in the Total Recall chair. If you are watching on YouTube, you can see me about to get memories implanted for my trip to Mars. But tonight is going to be Total Recall for this episode. We're going to be doing episode 246 tonight. And you can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/246. And before we introduce our guest on the last night's portion of the show, let's say hello to Robert. How are things going over on the west side or east side, wherever the heck you are these days?
What's up, Daniel? What's up, everybody? Thanks. Glad to be back. Always happy to be on the show. Things are great. We actually had a thunderstorm recently. And even though I think the lightning strike started a few fires, it's mostly helped to wetten things and help put things out. And so there's actually less smoke. It's quite nice.
Well, you know, you got that climate change ruining everybody's lives over there, you know, drying it out and making it so it doesn't rain anymore. There are some odd things happening over here, though, and that is due to the amount of dryness and the extreme heat that we had, we seem to have a biblical plague of flies just in our yard. There's probably a million of them. It's the most I've ever seen. Also, we have like a carpet, wall-to-wall carpet in our yard, front yard, backyard, of pine needles, just dried pine needles. It's kind of strange. We've been here like 6 or 7 years and we've never quite seen it like this. So, you know, I blame the dirty garbage can just ruining Mother Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. Evil humans doing their thing, living. Just do you come up with some kind of a solution, like of a final sort? I know you're really excited about next week's episode.
Yeah. You know, so far our solution has just been to try to enjoy the summer the best we can. Get the kids out before any more lockdowns are imposed, because those seem to be on the menu, unfortunately, though they don't do any good. So I don't understand what the point is. Well, actually, I do understand what the point is. It's that taste of power that they less not relinquish, which is, of course, not good for anybody. But so we are trying to get out and do stuff and enjoy the summer.
Do you have a plan for the flies other than to just wait them out? Because I have a bug assault ready to go.
You do?
Oh, yeah. I executed, I think, 3 flies in my house today. I have very little sympathy for those little monsters. I will kill one. I won't even flinch about it. My softer side is totally dead when it comes to flies. They just die. I am merciless. I am Fly Hitler. I don't care.
Yeah, and you're the guy who was very sensitive and caring and always like so such an animal lover, especially if it's cold enough. And so if people were to question your temperament to me, I would describe it as he wouldn't hurt a fly. Well, now exactly. I know. Now I know better. After 40 some odd years of knowing you.
I will slaughter them.
Yeah, that I've learned something new.
With extreme prejudice.
Yeah.
Even the young little babies, just to hear their screams.
Wow. Brutal, man. Brutal. You're almost as bad as the de Blasio character in this Total Recall movie we're talking about, where he cuts off the air to the mutant population in Sector 7G.
Yeah, I guess this is like a hand guide for de Blasio, and that's how he's been mayoring New York City these days. So yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah, he's like, all right, for source material, I'm going to go back to Total Recall and read 1984, and that's going to be my game plan. Or how to manage the city.
It's to protect the people, Daniel. What don't you get?
It's all about your health. Anyway, if we haven't been kicked off yet, I'm sure we will be as we get into this movie, and especially next week, which I will let people know what that movie is going to be when we finish this movie called Total Recall, not the remake, but the original, the good one, the Paul Verhoeven one with Arnold. So without much further ado, let's get into the last part of the show and introduce our guest. Hey, everybody, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson. We are the Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com and also on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. And tonight we're going to be doing Total Recall, the Paul Verhoeven and Arnold Schwarzenegger version, not the Colin Farrell remake. And this is episode 189 of the show. You can find the show notes more at lastnighters.com/189. And our special guest is a returning guest, most recently on for Logan's Run. He's also been on for Conspiracy, Soylent Green, and The Day the Earth Stood Still, both versions. It is Dr. Dennis Foster. Welcome back to the show, Dennis. And why don't you remind everyone what you do and maybe give them a sneak preview of one or two of the other movies that you are considering doing with us in the future.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's always good to be here with you and Robert and participating in some of these movie reviews. And I have no end to a list of favorites, really. So I don't think I'm ever going to run out of possibles for you to do. I am a professor at Northern Arizona University. I teach in the business college, teach mostly money and banking. I'm an economist. Although this is my final year, I'm going to retire next May. So it's been 31 years here. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. And some of the suggestions, a lot of them are from longer ago, because that's, you know, what influenced me and what I was attracted to. The Andromeda Strain is a good one. I really like The 13th Floor. If you're familiar with Matrix, this is sort of a similar sort of idea, but one that always appealed to me very much. Westworld's a great classic. The Manchurian Classic, Manchurian Candidate, is also very good. Even the new one is, as well as the old one. And perhaps even most appropriate for this venue is the Will Smith and Gene Hackman movie, Enemy of the State.
Right. Yeah. I remember watching Enemy of the State a while back, and it still holds up pretty well. And it was also very prescient, you know, because that was what, 94, 95, something like that. And you see that stuff and you're like, holy crap, they're doing a lot of that kind of thing now. So,
yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that that's a pretty good list, and we'll be happy to have you on as long as we're not canceled and we're still doing this kind of stuff. And congratulations on the upcoming retirement. I know that you will keep busy. It's really impressive. And I'm a little bit sad in a way, because we used to do the Rothbard roundtables together on Saturday nights, and you would tell us like what you were teaching your students and that you were referencing Mises works and assigning the Tom Woods books and things like that. And I was like, oh, there's somebody on the inside behind enemy lines, you know, red pilling people and spreading, you know, good economics. I hope that you have some proteges who are going to be taking that mantle.
Well, I wouldn't say I have anybody that's going to pick up, especially on the faculty, from what I'm doing. But I did have a student of mine this summer go to the Mises University event. So that was a first for any of the students that I have. So that was kind of cool.
Okay. All right. There is hope. There is hope for the future.
Well, and I think I've mentioned this before, but 99% of my students just completely resonate with this stuff. This material, I talk about, do we really need the Federal Reserve, and how does the government control the money supply, and how does it mess up the economy, and they are sort of, I think, of the mindset of, we always thought that was the case, but we didn't ever hear it from anybody else.
Right. Yeah. There really is very little in the mainstream media that would run counter to it. Like, they're always just talking about, oh, the Fed should do this slightly different thing than the other side wants them to do. Whereas there's like no curiosity about like, what's the purpose of them and how was it developed and what does it actually do and what are the effects of it downstream? So it's a lot to take in, you know, and it also has that tinge of conspiracy theory. Uh-huh. But you do and have done great work, and I congratulate you on the upcoming retirement.
Well, thanks.
And Robert, what is the item up for bid tonight? Can you make a wampin' sound for us?
Womp.
Womp. All right. So I'm going to bring up the Google description, which is how we start this thing off. And I got to find which tab that is on my screen here. There we go. All right. So Total Recall 1990, rated R sci-fi / sci-fi film, 1 hour and 53 minutes. It got a 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 57% on Metacritic, 82% of Rotten Tomatoes, and 91% of Google users like it. The description reads, Douglas Quaid, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, is a bored construction worker in the year 2084 who dreams of visiting the colonized Mars. He visits Recall, a company that plants false memories into people's brains in order to experience the thrill of Mars without having to travel there. But something goes wrong during the procedure. Quaid discovers that his entire life is actually a false memory and that the people who implanted it in his head now want him dead. Came out on Robert's birthday back in 1990, directed by Paul Verhoeven. And it's a story that was originated with a short story by Philip K. Dick and then was sussed out into a pretty decent sci-fi contrivance or mechanism. And Robert, we'll go to you for your opening salvo on Total Recall.
Man, they don't make movies like this anymore. I haven't seen this movie in decades, but I think at the time when it came out, I liked it more than the average person. I've always been a big sci-fi fan from Alien, Aliens, I don't know, RoboCop, Terminator. So I was, you know, this is like a Nexus thing for me. I watching it today, I was laughing and smiling and just having so much fun and just remarking how they just don't make movies like this anymore. Now, maybe because they've gotten better about some aspects and a lot of it's kind of silly because it is a lot of running and shooting. And but then the plot of that is actually pretty smart. And of course, it's got good source material to draw from. I know Daniel's going to rip on Arnold for his acting ability, and rightfully so. These people who get away with this kind of crap should be held to account. You know, Arnold is at his best when he is playing a robot, an unfeeling, uncaring machine. When he is playing a human being, and he's doing anything other than running and shooting somebody or punching somebody, it's not as good. Like there's some scenes with Sharon Stone where he's like acting like a boyfriend or a husband. And like, there's some romance and it's really like, I don't buy this at all. I don't buy that these people care about each other at all. Now it comes out in the plot that these people have been placed together. So it kind of works. And you could almost say it's like a genius the way they did that, but I don't really buy that. I think it's more you hired Arnold Schwarzenegger to be this action star and this is the movie you made. Now I think a sci-fi purist would kind of turn up their nose at a movie like this where it's been turned into kind of an action gore fest. I mean, you hire Verhoeven to do it. You hire Verhoeven of splatter gore. Didn't you do Toxic Avenger and then he did RoboCop and now he's doing Total Recall? It's like, I'm sure if someone's just a fan of Dick, they're just like, what are you doing to my favorite author? Turning it into giving it to this guy to do? Can't, like, you know, I don't know. Anybody else? Was everybody else busy? But I had a great time. If they, you know, they turned it into an action movie with, you know, in a sci-fi setting. Is more of what it is, but there's enough of the, you know, what is reality kind of elements thrown in, you know, what is really happening? Is this a dream? What, you know, who is he? Is he really Quaid or is he, I forget the other guy's name, but it's heart. It's just, you're having a great time. At least I was. Maybe other people wouldn't, but the miniatures, though, I gotta harp on the miniatures for just a minute. It's really a movie that is it's an older car. The cracks are showing in the paint. It's fading a little bit. And they don't make movies like this anymore in terms of the special effects. Like the prosthetics you know, they stick out, but they still look pretty decent. But the miniatures look horrific. They really just look bad. They look like Logan's Run miniatures. I know Daniel's going to compare them. Or he already did compare them to Logan's Run. He's absolutely right. I mean, Logan's Run is even worse. This is a step up from Logan's Run, but it's really so obvious. Like today, those would probably be CGI scenes or shot integrated more with, you know, live action in that sense. But I still had a great time and it didn't bother me. Like all the movie's cracks didn't ruin my good time. I had a lot of fun with this one.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good opening take. And yeah, well, the miniatures, though they're not as obviously miniature, it's like, it's not like Mr. Rogers style where you're going into the land of make-believe where the little trolley goes through the tunnel, you know, ding, ding. But it is pretty noticeable. And you're right, I think it would be a little bit different done today or in 2012 when they attempted to remake this film. Was it 2012 or 2015? Either
12.
Way. 12, okay. It was last week's episode, Point Break, which we did with Peddling Fiction, Johnny Profita. Great, great show, by the way. Check him out, peddlingfictionpodcast.com. But they redid that one, I think, in 2015. And that was also like one of those things where they take a really good movie and then remake it for some reason and just do a really terrible job at remaking it when there's perfectly good concepts that were not well executed waiting to be redone. And for whatever reason, they're just recycling stuff that was already pretty successful. Like I think last week you mentioned maybe in the post-show bonus content that there was talk of redoing Princess Bride. And it's like, come on. I mean, well, Andre the Giant's gone. So what are you going to do? You know, like try to have The Rock do it or something. Like he seems to be doing everything these days. All those Disney movies and Fast and the Furious and all that, but he's no Andre the Giant. I'm sorry. So anyway, that's my little mini rant about remakes and miniatures. And Dennis, let's go to you for your opening on this was a movie that you had wanted to do. You suggested it. So what stands out to you that that this was one you wanted to do?
Well, I saw it when it came out. So I mean, there is that, and I liked it a lot, and I am a big fan of Philip K. Dick's works, and the movies haven't been, you know, super close to the stories. In fact, even in this case here, about all you've got is the Total Recall part of it, where there's the memory implants, and then it doesn't work. Nobody dies in the short story, and he doesn't actually go to Mars and do all the stuff that they're doing here. So there are some major differences, but I think, as Robert said, it's a fun movie. I think the cast is really good. It's interesting to see people that we sort of now associate with other roles. I mean, there's some Star Trek people in there, and of course Paul Verhoeven's people from RoboCop and from also Starship Troopers. So it's interesting to see those people in a different role, but you know, still in the, maybe it's almost in the same universe. So I always am kind of attracted to that. I would say that, like the main character, I've also been fascinated by the idea of Mars anyway. So I kind of gravitate to those kinds of movies, just sort of naturally. I would say there's one thing that I like. I wasn't put off by the miniatures. I was watching some of the special features, and they were saying there was only one scene where there's digital effects, and it was the X-ray machine at the metro station. Everything else was puppets, matte paintings, miniatures, you know, filmed and then put into the movie that way. So I think actually it's kind of interesting, but you're probably right that it's sort of the end of that era. But I was also impressed with the fact that the people in the movie weren't wearing some kind of crazy futuristic clothing. They seemed sort of naturally to fit that environment, you know, on Mars and on Earth. And it also, in a kind of a funny way, I thought it was kind of nice to see a fight between a man and a woman, Arnold and Sharon Stone, where he wins. And it's like, of course he wins. He's bigger, he's stronger. You know, she can kick him all she wants. He's still going to win. And it seems like the movies that we see nowadays, I sometimes just cringe and I go, you know, Charlize Theron could beat me up, but I don't think she could beat up all these other people. So I thought that was kind of neat. And actually, I like the fight between the two girls, between Lori and Melina, because I thought that seemed, I mean, realistic in and of itself.
Yeah, I liked it when Arnold actually finally got a hand on Sharon and he's just like, I'm just going to throw you over the table. Just like basically with one hand. Because that's what exactly would happen. I mean, the guy lifts like this is like peak steroid Arnold. And the guy could, yeah, he could probably bench press like 500-600 pounds. I mean, it's not a thing for him to lift up a 120-pound woman.
Yeah, and I know it's, of course, you know, it's never okay to hit a woman and all that, but in the context of the story.
She was trying to kill him, Daniel.
Yeah, in the context of the story.
She was trying to murder him with a gun.
It certainly seemed like.
And she kicked him in the balls twice.
Or three times, yeah. Twice in one sequence, and then once again later when they fight again on Mars.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Dennis, the Philip K. Dick story was I have a loose recollection of it. It's like we remember it for you wholesale or at wholesale prices or something like that. So was that just the concept of the being able to go and visit somewhere with an implanted memory? So it's like the guy who gave him the tour of what was going to happen. He's like, you don't have to deal with packing your luggage around and going through security lines and, you know, all that hassle. And this is first class all the way. And in a way, I mean, that's actually kind of appealing because what do you really have after you have gone on a trip somewhere? You know, like you have some pictures and maybe some souvenirs and then the memories of having gone. And so, I mean, I think that there maybe is a kernel of a idea here, which will, of course, get turned around and used to enslave us into Matrix style pods so that we think that we're living actual vacations and lives. But I like the premise of it. And I also like them using that as a mechanism to drive the plot forward and have the twist where Hauser, the alter ego of Quaid, is actually in on it and reveals himself to be so. And I thought that was really smart and made it an even better kind of a movie.
Yeah, I liked how there were two services that offered, you know, different price points that kind of gave you the same thing. Although like the recall service could not send you to Mars, but could make you believe you'd gone to Mars and make you believe that you'd been a secret agent on Mars or a playboy on Mars or, you know, any number of other roles on Mars. But then this other service could actually send you to Mars, but couldn't offer that stuff. So I like that the market was servicing two different, you know, things or three or multiple different desires there all at the same time. It was realistic.
Yeah. I think in the story, it's the same as the first part of the movie where he goes in and then he starts having a reaction because he's actually been to Mars and they're trying to give him these memories and things break down as a result. So that part is all from the book, but the book is more like the Inception story, because then it turns out he escapes and comes back and they decide they're going to erase those memories and put in some deeper memories. And it turns out he has even deeper, a deeper revelation. And so that's where it diverges, you know, from the movie. I think the movie does a good job of, you know, taking that idea and then running with it. I think they spent somewhere like 10 years where this thing went through scripts and changes and really it was, how do we finish this whole thing off? And it seems like they found a very good way to wrap things up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really cool. And when I was telling my kids right before we came on tonight, I was having dinner with them. I was like, oh, we're talking about this movie called Total Recall. And I sort of gave them a brief overview of it. And then my six-year-old daughter was like, oh yeah, I had a dream about having a dream about having a dream about having a dream. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's sort of like this, but, you know, more like that Leo DiCaprio movie Inception, which I think is a movie that Robert, we should do at some point. I think it's really good. The only thing missing in this is a spinning top in Total Recall. But I think it's a really cool, you know, way, because like, you don't really know as an audience whether what's happening is intended to be the reality of what's happening or not. And then they play to that with that scene where he's on Mars, and then they pretend the doctor comes in and is like, hey, I've been implanted to intercede, to talk you down. You're having a psychotic break. And we've got your wife here, you know, to lend some authenticity to that concept, because the last he saw her, she was on Earth, and he thinks he's on Mars at this point. And they tell him to take this pill, which I don't know what the
pill was. Red pill, Daniel.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
to return to reality.
It's not from the Matrix.
Predates the Matrix.
Predates the Matrix. Yeah. And then there's the little bead of sweat that is like the thing that makes him realize, no, this is actually happening. Like, they wouldn't simulate that. Like, they wouldn't think of that level of detail in my simulation.
Right. Yeah.
Well, there is a flaw, because the doctor is telling him that it's become Arnold's own dream, that he has taken their foundation and turned it into his own. So I think they did an excellent job of making that uncertain. And at the end, you can argue both ways. It was a dream or it was real. And I don't think there might be some little things that you could point to, but nothing definitive, at least in my mind.
Yeah. And I think you can watch the movie either way, as if you think you're watching a dream, or if you think it's all happening and really happening, and go back and forth and just have a good time the whole time. I was massively impressed by, I mean, the fact that you basically have Arnold Schwarzenegger who stars in these big action movies, big high budget. I mean, he started off in Conan the Barbarian. Well, he actually started off in Hercules in New York, if you ever want to watch that film. But then he went on to Conan the Barbarian, and actually was dubbed in that movie because they didn't believe he could talk and didn't like his accent. And, you know, they're probably right. But, you know, he's in these big, dumb action movies. And then now he's doing this smart sci-fi movie. And it's just, I don't know about you guys, but it's almost like, oh, I'm just going to watch this as a big, dumb action movie. And then I'll just take it for granted what's actually happening and not really think into it. And I think you can enjoy the movie that way. And then I think you can also enjoy the movie a whole lot by reading into every last little bit and going, well, what's really happening? I'm not sure. Yes, no, this is all a dream. You can waffle around and have a great time. And the funniest point in the movie is when the female doctor slaps the assistant and says, "Shut up." And I go, this is how people need to act more often. This is hilarious.
I like the one where, oh, that's your wife, huh? Yeah, she's a real bitch.
That's a good one, too.
But to your point about Arnold being in these big, dumb action movies, I think there is something to that. But I also really enjoyed the premise behind, say, Predator and T2. And there was another one that actually had...
T2 is after this movie.
Oh, yeah.
T2 is 91.
Yeah. 91. The Running Man, I thought, had elements of this where there's like a decent plot that they've hung onto an action movie exoskeleton.
Yeah, although I think this surpasses Running Man, I think, in my view, in terms of what the plot is, for sure.
Yeah, and Predator is what, a top five for you?
Oh, Predator is an instant classic. Predator is as rewatchable today. That's like remaking The Princess Bride if you redo Predator. They've done many versions of, you know, Predator sequels, but they've never actually gone back and tried to redo Predator, because why would you?
Just to make it.
Yeah, I tend to agree on that point as well. And sort of getting to Robert's point too, it is, I can't stand to watch movies that are 100% action. It's like I need some plot to hold things together. And this movie, I mean, I think the action today goes overboard. I mean, they seem to shoot their guns off all the time without regard to what's going on, which maybe is an indictment of the state. But there's good time spent on the plot, and that I liked in this movie.
Yeah, and I like the element of the risk of revolution bubbling under the surface, and all this tension with this oligarch trying to hold on to power and quell, you know, potential rebellion, and that there were like these speakeasies with Underground Railroad type tunnels and stuff where the last resort people would actually rise up and protect Quaid and the woman and actually fight back against the enforcers and actually win up to a point. But then the enforcers kept bringing more reinforcements. And then they did the de Blasio thing where they're going to not allow them to be part of society and breathe air anymore.
Yeah, that was a really fun scene for me when Quaid and the girl and the taxi driver all are being chased and they go to the last resort bar and the enforcers come after them and just everybody in the bar pulls out guns. They're just like, everybody with all these guns, even the, I mean, just everybody, the prostitutes and everybody, they're all just like, yeah, okay, it's on now. That was fantastic.
Yeah. And I've, the Benny character, that was another plot twist that I did not see coming, because like, how would they have planted him to be the guy that picked him up earlier on in the movie? I mean, I guess it works. They could have made everyone be there if they knew that Quaid was in that area. They'd be like, all right, we're gonna have like four potential taxicab agents, and he'll end up with one of them and earn their trust or earn his trust and then get closer to Quato.
Yeah, and I like the way that there's that scene where Arnold was calling out. He's like, bullshit, it was too perfect. Like, you couldn't have set all this up. Mm-hmm. And like, we've gone on rants before in movies where the plan is just too perfect and it gets pulled off to a T, because in reality, there's way too many moving parts. And Arnold calls it perfectly. He's like, no way you could have planned all this to come down perfectly. There's too many moving parts. But like, to your point, maybe they did have every single taxi cab person, or maybe that was the taxi cab guy that he already liked, you know?
Oh, from before.
As Hauser.
Yeah, because there seemed to be some residual stuff in there that mm-hmm. they couldn't wipe. That's why he was thinking about Mars and all of that stuff. So yeah, maybe there's something along those lines. It also seemed like they were sort of adapting to the circumstances around a larger, like, overall goal. You know, so it's not like they had every particular step picked out, but based on the circumstances at hand, they would make some decisions to move their plan forward. And I think that is often how the bureaucratic class and the elites tend to operate, is they'll take advantage of crisis situation, real or manufactured, to pursue their end goals. Like, so many times whenever there's a quote unquote crisis, they'll immediately have like boatloads of legislation ready to go. And you know that they had that in their back pocket, just waiting for the time to present it and implement it.
Right. Yeah. Right after 9/11, like, what, it was like a week after they had the Patriot Act, and it was like 5,000 pages or some crap. It's like, yeah, you've been working on this one a while, boys. Now, just what did you guys think of Dr. Evil's evil plan? Like, he's having a problem trying to find this Quato, this rebel leader guy, and he just can't get him. He's throwing all his best guys. They're all Johnny on the spot. They're all looking for him. But the muties, they always sense when they're getting, if you're a bad guy.
Yeah, they're like empaths. Yeah.
Right. They can just mentally pick you out. So they needed some sort of Manchurian candidate. Now, it seems like an overly complicated plot, even with this crazy technology. But did it seem like it? Like, a bureaucrat could have come up with this plan, like a bureaucrat in the Hauser, they're working on it for like a year and they planned it all out. And then, I mean, you're planning on having your right-hand man get his memory wiped to be somebody else. But then he needs to overcome that programming to want to go back to Mars so that he can come back to get to Mars and then get recruited by some other resistance people. Find Quato, and then they can shoot him. But then he didn't even shoot him. It was the taxi driver. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It all seems a bit, like Arnold says, bullshit. It's too complicated, and it's relying on too many factors that are outside of your control to even happen at all.
And like and they've got the main pursuer in the dark on this plan.
Yes.
Right. He could have killed him at any point. I mean, he didn't know that Arnold was the main character in the movie. He could have shot him and killed him. I mean, He's got all his guys, and he's in a Paul Verhoeven movie. So, you know, everybody's getting messed up in those movies.
But see, now this is the reason you could support the argument that it's a dream, because if it's a dream, you could have all kinds of plot holes. It doesn't matter. It's just a dream. Yes. Mm. Sure. Benny somehow was following you, and also Richter and Quaid got to Mars apparently on the same ship. Mm-hmm. because they're both in the transit area. It's like, well, didn't they see each other or something in the lounge or something like that? And then Sharon Stone is there within a day or so. And if you think about if there's any reason to think about the realistic amount of time it takes to get from Earth to Mars, then you start thinking, well, maybe it was a dream.
Right. Because isn't it at least a couple of months? With today's technology, I mean, of course, sci-fi universe, you could say it's faster, but
mm-hmm. even well, if it took a week.
Maybe they're doing that temporal transport, teleportation type stuff, like wormholes, folded space, astral projection.
Sure. But they're all in angled
physical rockets.
Cars. Yeah, okay. Whatever.
But they haven't figured out the smartphone yet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, they did have video screen phones, and that's pretty cutting edge for 91 here, or 1990. When he does arrive on Mars and he's dressed as that woman, do they tell us why it starts like freaking out and he can't like maintain composure and so he reveals himself as Quaid?
Because we needed to have more action scenes. I don't think that there was ever an explanation. No, it just started bugging out. Like it would have made more sense though, right? If like some kind of sensing equipment that the guy had kind of revealed it or something like, yeah, I just got this brand new sensor just today and we're going to check you out. Maybe that would have helped. I don't know. Cause otherwise, well, it just all of a sudden stops working at the right perfect moment.
Cohagen also in his little speech about how they set him up mentions the mask. And I guess that's what he's referring to. Is that, yeah, we also, provided that. And I don't know, one would presume maybe there would be a scene where somebody says, it's not going to last forever. And maybe it's just the time where it expires and runs out. And he just didn't get away before that happened.
Yeah, that would have been good too. If there was a time limit or that runs out of batteries or something, who knows?
Yeah, and then there's one other area, and I don't know if maybe there was just like a connecting scene that was sort of missing, but when they capture him and what's her name, Lita, or anyway, you know who I'm talking about, the brunette.
Oh yeah.
And they put him in the machines to wipe them again, and then they fight their way free from that. Does the main villain, does he know that he's escaped? Because it like cuts right from that scene to him talking to Richter and being like, okay, kill him. And it's like, well, does he have awareness that Quaid has broken out of this, or is he in the dark and thinks that this procedure has gone through? And so now he's just saying, well, kill him anyway, because he's served his usefulness.
Interesting.
He also, when he's not giving the air to the mutants, and then Quaid says to him, you've got what you want. Why don't you, give them air now? And he's like, nah, fuck him. So he seems to be a guy who kind of reneges on whatever deals that he's put in place.
Yeah, but I read that completely straight. I thought that there was some scene we weren't shown where he was alerted to the fact that Quaid had escaped without getting implanted or whatever, mm-hmm. or being reverted back to. That was my take.
Yeah, I think I had the same kind of problem with why is he doing this if he's going through the trouble of putting him back in the machine. And I guess that would really be the only answer, is that he already knows that he has escaped.
Yeah. So we're just kind of missing that brief, 2 second, like he's made it, he's gotten out or something. I mean, yes. The one guy hits like an alarm when he grabs that axe. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's meant to convey that people
right.
have been made aware.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just assumed that that's what had happened. But okay. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a little sloppy in the storytelling aspects of it. But maybe they did that intentionally. Who knows? Maybe they're, leaning into the dream aspects. I don't know.
So Cohagen, he seems to be a very technically bright guy. Like, he's got this elaborate plan, and he thinks of himself very highly. Like, he's a very smart guy, smarter than the people, you know, Quato's people and the Muties and all of those things, smarter than Richter. He's treating Richter like he's his dumb muscle lackey. But he's also the expert, right? He's getting this turbanium or whatever it's called, mining it. And he's aware of this half a million year old massive machine in this pyramid on Mars. And he seems to be convinced that if that thing gets activated, it's going to kill everybody. It's going to destroy the planet. So they almost play it like he's afraid of losing his monopoly on selling air and having this super abundant resource, the super abundant air being created by this machine. They almost play that like greedy capitalist angle. But then it does seem as if he's convinced that it's going to end up destroying the planet if this alien hardware is implemented or reinitiated, turned on. So it's an example of an expert, bureaucratic expert who's in charge of things, being wrong, at least up to the point where we're seeing by the end of this movie where the sky turns blue and the air, the oxygen, is breathable in the atmosphere.
Right. It's the example of if you believe the politicians at their word, which I don't, I'm sorry, skeptic. And I've just know too much about politicians, but you hear about like de Blasio saying that, you know, the voluntary period is over and we're now going to go to mandates, but we're doing mandates
to encourage,
to protect the people. That's what we're doing. We're protecting the people. And that's what this dude in this movie is doing. He's making it sure that we don't turn on this machine because he's convinced that everybody's going to die if you turn it on, and he wants to protect the people.
Meanwhile, he's killing a whole section of people in like section
Listen,
G.
You can't make an omelet, Daniel. Okay.
Yeah, you gotta dictator's excuse.
No, it's another plot hole. Just as you're saying, we see the scene with Cohagen walking through and nobody really knows what's going to happen. In fact, Richter is the one that says, well, let's turn it on and see what happens. And Cohagen saying, no, we don't know what's going to happen. But then somehow, after Quaid's encounter with Quato, he knows that it's going to melt the water and generate oxygen in the atmosphere.
Point.
And,
yes.
And it's like, how did that get connected up dot to dot to dot? And there has to be something there that we also missed.
Yeah. How does Hauser know, but the Dr. Evil not know?
Because it's a dream.
Yeah. You know, there are other movies, and I couldn't name one right now, but where there's like this cheap ending where it's like everything you just saw, meaningless. It was all a dream.
Well, now I have a point, if I can raise, that I thought was kind of interesting too, and it was the age old question of nature versus nurture, because what we have here is virtual nurture, right? This Hauser guy is changed into Quaid, and he's taking on this new persona. And he seems to be okay with it. He doesn't want to go back to Hauser, assuming that that's really the way this is working out. And it's all because of these implanted memories.
Right. Yeah.
It's like they implanted some empathy into him.
Yes. Well, his nurture was virtual.
Yeah. Modern leftist theory would say that what he would need to change his body, like who he is now. I'm having a thought. Can't quite. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud. Continue.
Hey, don't hurt yourself.
Well, it was just, I was thinking about this, you know, it's not only that he has suppressed his memories, but that he is like now on the other side, which of course is part of the plan. We need to get you to get into the organization so we can find the main guy and kill him off. And so he has now adopted that as the persona he wants. And especially since he was kind of confronted with Hauser's video, mm-hmm. You could say that, well, now he's like expressing some free will and saying, well, I'd rather be Quaid than Hauser.
Yeah. And then also when he re-encounters the resistance people on Mars, they know him, right? She was his lover before, and they thought of him as someone who's defected from Cohagen's team. But since they're mutants, they would have been able to tell if he was truthful or not. So they must have wiped Hauser not once, but twice. Wiped him once to get him ingratiated with the resistance on Mars, and then wiped him again and sent him to Earth.
Yeah, that's the only way that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because Hauser, you're right, Hauser's not hanging out with the meaties. He's getting pegged immediately. So he was must have been a second personality. Or Quaid again. And then this is Quaid 2.0.
But if he was already ingratiated with them on Mars, why send him to Earth after a second wipe? Because it's all a dream.
Well, it seemed like he's dealing with two kinds of people. He's dealing with people that are not mutants, in which case he can just pretend to be on their side, like Melina. But then if he wants to get close to the mutants, since they'll be able to read him and maybe they have to sort of sit down and really pay attention as opposed to just in passing, then he needs to, I guess, go through this process of wiping those memories so that he seems like he's really on their side.
Oh, so if he was just dating Melina before and not truly in with the muties yet, then he could have been just Turncoat Hauser or pretend to be Turncoat Hauser. Okay. This is deep, man.
This is some complicated stuff. So he never actually had been to that bar before then?
Well, he left himself
that note. Some of the mutants note. Acted like they had seen him before.
He left a note for himself.
Yeah, for a good time.
It was in the safe deposit box. At this
bar. So he had to have been there before, or at least they'd gotten that flyer somehow.
Yeah, we're overthinking this.
Probably, but this is what was presented to us.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's good. And again, I do like the reveal of Hauser was actually in on it to hatch this elaborate plan. I mean, it is a bit of a mind bender with this movie. And so I think that's one of the things that makes it stand out. Because you're right, you do have kind of this gory violence with unlimited ammunition and brutal fighting, but around it you have some actual like smart concepts, deep concepts going on.
Smarter than has any right to be. It is an action movie with a sci-fi thinker bolted onto it, and is it a sci-fi movie with action movie bolted onto it? I don't know. I mean, obviously the source material is sci-fi, but like Dennis says, it's just the general concept was taken from it, nothing else. But I don't know. It's good. It still turned out fun. I don't know what the 2012 remake is. I'm sure this will be remade again in the future at some point. It's a fun concept that I'm not exactly super interested to watch the 2012, but I like the concept so much that I wouldn't be against, even though I know you hadn't went on a rant about remaking things. If you don't have to remake this movie, but you could just do another something in the same vein. I mean, you could call it whatever you want. Yeah. I mean, it's just too much fun to not play around with these toys.
Yeah. I did watch the trailer for the 2012, and the trailer, I mean, I know that's the point of a trailer, is to make it look really good. It looks really good in the trailer, but I have not seen the movie and I've heard bad things. Dennis, have you seen it?
Oh yeah. I've seen it. I've got it. It's barely passable. I mean,
do they just shot for shot remake this one, or what do they do?
That Mars doesn't play a role. There's a giant, some kind of giant elevator in the Earth that goes from the poor part to the rich part. And so workers take this elevator every day, which seems way too expensive, in order to do work on the in the rich areas. And
yeah, being then there's an underground and
what revolution. That so much sounds like a Metropolis, doesn't it? That sounds a lot like Metropolis. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you get bored, Robert, maybe check it out. All right.
maybe.
So I have a mini rant about this movie in that Robert and I shared a Fandango account to make certain movies available to you to be able to watch them after I'd purchased them. But then Vudu bought Fandango, or Fandango bought Vudu, either way. But they're going forward with Vudu being the platform. And so that ability for you to log in to Fandango has been wiped away. So even though I bought this movie like a week ago with the intention of you being able to watch it, you lost that ability. And there was a transition period with no overlap. So there was a delay. And 2 days before needing to do this recording that we're doing right now, live streaming for our Patreon supporters, go to lastnight.com/Patreon. It was unavailable to me. And so I ranted as nice as I could at their customer service people after waiting for like 2 hours to talk to them and let them know that I was not pleased with this first world problem of the movies I paid for not being immediately available to me. And I feel kind of like a dick even mentioning it, but I felt like their transition plan was not well executed. I felt like they should have stood up the one and then turned off the other versus shut down one and then in some nebulous time frame turn on the other. That's my rant about that.
Yes, capitalism has failed. It was a little sloppy on their part. I mean, where you're making things, it's a sloppy handoff transition phase for sure. I like that you asked them to just give you the movie and they were like, I can't do that. And then you're like, well, who can? And they're like, well, only the top level service people. I'm like, okay, well, let me talk to the top level service people. And they're like, they don't talk to people like you. It's like, what good are they if they don't talk to customers? It's like, well, you can't email them and you can't actually message them. You can't call them. But they're service people somehow. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And my point to them was, well, I mean, I already own it. You know that. Like, you know, it's in the one library. You can see it there. So just, you know, turn it on for me on this other one. As a one off, like give me like an access pass to it or whatever. But it was fine. It ended up turning on. When I first engaged with them, they were like, yeah, we don't know when this will go through. Like, you know, check again in 24 hours, basically what their answer was. And there was no guarantee. Like, they weren't saying, oh, it'll be done within 24 hours. They're like, oh, check again in 24 hours. So I was like, well, I'm recording this episode, you know? So anyway, that's enough ranting about that. I give them 3 kids to feed on their handling of that situation. And if we don't have any last notes or anything, we can get in a final summary and review and give a number of kids to feed out of 10 as our rating system, unless either one of you have a better idea for rating system.
I have 2 nitpicks, if anybody wants to hear my nitpicks, but I don't have any other notes. Dennis?
Go ahead.
Okay, here are my nitpicks. Okay. During the final battle, they are, all these guys are around in this, you know, what they, this little set that they've made with these pillars. And Arnie's got this hologram device. And at one point, he walks into the middle and they're just circling him. Circle him. And he's standing there and they all unload magazines into what they think is this hologram. Or the thing is him, but it's actually a hologram. Wouldn't the bullets go through the hologram and into each other? Like, but not a single bad guy is harmed at all. Now, later, like 2 minutes later, they use the hologram to get 2 bad guys to shoot each other.
Yeah, Melina does that, yeah.
Yeah, in this particular scene, like they just unload into Arnold and he's just laughing and having a great time, as you would. But like, at some point they should have gone, oh shit, did we load blanks? Because it didn't do anything. And then my last nitpick is when the oxygen is finally shooting out of the mountain, it turns the sky blue, which makes zero sense. Yes, I understand visual effect. They want to give you the idea that there's an atmosphere now, but it would still be a red sky because the Earth sky on blue is blue because it reflects the light off the oceans. not because of the oxygen in the atmosphere.
I thought it was the nitrogen that vibrates at a blue frequency.
Is that true, Daniel? Are you just fucking with me right now?
I think I read that somewhere, but I don't fully understand it.
I'm not a scientist, but I could be wrong.
Well, wasn't the machine was melting ice or something that Cohagen said was like filled up the core of the planet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
So that
means maybe there's a whole lot of water in the atmosphere.
Yeah, somewhere.
But it would still be reflected. Okay, maybe Daniel's right about the nitrogen thing. I still think I'm right about the ocean thing. Anyway, those are my nitpicks.
And after that little shootout where they realize he's a hologram and then he pretends to be a hologram, he's like, haha, it's really me. And then he shoots them. I thought that was like a clever little almost inside joke moment in that scene.
It's an inside joke between him and the two people he's going to kill. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a short-lived joke.
You know, it's funny. There were a number of, I think, pretty good one-liners in this movie. And some of them weren't, like, I remember one where Arnold is talking to Laurie and he says, clever girl. And mm-hmm. he says it in a way that, for me, channeled Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
right, absolutely. But this predated.
It's like Jurassic Park comes out, whatever. Oh. 4 years later.
Yeah. 93.
So it's, mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, when Muldoon is tracking the Velociraptor, right. And the mm-hmm. Velociraptor is tracking him. And he says that line in exactly the same way, which I thought was kind of funny. But I had one kind of thought about, I always think about the structure of what the world looks like. They made reference to a northern block and a southern block, as if the world was had devolved into two super powers, two super countries, sort of like 1984, right, with Oceania and East Asia and all that kind of stuff. So it seemed like at least that's the way they're portraying the Earth. And clearly it's like a fascist state, right, because you've got all these corporate presence. You've got the Hilton Hotel, you've got the Coca-Cola sign, the Pepsi sign. I mean, they must have made tons of money on product placement, even though some of them don't hold up very well, like Fujifilm and Sharper Image. But still, the idea was that there was a big corporate presence. And so one would think that there would be the desire to still maximize profits. I think this gets to maybe a point that Robert was making earlier. It's like, because I thought if Cohagen knew the machine would actually create water and oxygen, he should see that as a huge profitable opportunity for him because he's right there ready to take advantage of it. But if he really does think that it's going to destroy the planet, like Daniel was saying, then, you know, that would, you know, make us sort of empathize with the fact that he doesn't want Quaid to actually turn the reactor on. But so I was still kind of mixed feelings on that because I thought, you know, this should be a profitable opportunity for him. And we know he doesn't take advantage of profitable opportunities because it seems to me that there's money to be made in psychic mutants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Lots of money.
You know how much money Miss Cleo made? And she wasn't even a real psychic.
Tell me now.
These people.
Instead, he kills them all, or he wants to kill them all.
Yeah, he's killing off a fat revenue stream, man. What are you doing?
Yeah, but, couple things. Being an economic thinker probably ruins a lot of movies for you.
Yeah. I used to tell my students that on Star Trek, they hired science advisors, but they never hired economists.
Right, right.
Absolutely not.
Post-scarcity, something like that. No money.
Well, yeah, they say that. But does everybody get to use the holodeck? No.
Nope.
That's right.
And the Ferengi, they trade something. Anyway.
Yeah, you were saying earlier about Dennis about the one-liners, and you're right. I mean, I know Arnold loves doing the one-liners. They're trademarked sort of in his films from Terminator 2 to Predator. But I really enjoyed his trademark, his one-liners in this movie. Consider This a Divorce was good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And See You at the Party Later. I really mm-hmm. enjoyed See You at the Party Later.
Really?
He kills the henchman guy.
I feel like that one kind of fell flat for me.
Did it? Because I loved it. I thought that was so funny.
Was that a Die Hard reference?
No, that'd be Welcome to the Party, Pal. No, it was because they were going to be meeting at the party later.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then there was the Screw You, which was a little on the nose.
The Screw You, I could have done without the Screw You. But yeah.
I think I laughed hardest at the one where Melina says, "What have you been feeding it?" And he says, "Blondes."
Yeah. That was good.
There's some good stuff in this film, man. Come on.
All right, Robert, you want to lead us off with your summary and review? I know you've kind of gone over most of your points already, but maybe a bit of a rehash. And then how many kids you got to feed?
Oh, man, got to feed so many kids in this movie. And I'm not even married, but I got so many kids. I don't know about the 2012 movie, but something tells me that they didn't, you know, they'll remake a movie and then it's like they won't capture the magic of what the original was. And oftentimes the magic is something, you know, those intangibles that you make from all the toil and all the on-screen interactions between actors on sets, coming up with lines, coming up with just having a good time together. And they're not just, I don't know, actors on a soundstage or recording their lines into a microphone. Something tells me that the tone of the 2012 is different than in this film. Because this movie, you wouldn't look at it from the promotional material or from the source material and think, well, this movie's going to be fun and funny. But it is. And I mean, maybe because you saw Verhoeven's RoboCop and maybe you're thinking, well, okay, I know what to expect. And for most, you know, you kind of do, right? With his previous stuff, you kind of know what you're getting into. And then you're mixing in Arnold Schwarzenegger and you're going, okay, now I know for a good shot about what I'm going to get into. But I still think you're going to be impressed and surprised by what this movie turned out to be. It's more than the sum of its parts. It's a lot of fun. It's a thinking sci-fi movie melded with an action film, and somehow it works. I don't know exactly how it does it, but it did. And you know, it's not perfect, and it's showing its age for sure. You have to kind of forgive it. It's the trappings of the time it was made in. But there's memorable scenes. There's memorable lines. And I don't think the same can be said of the 2012 remake. Sometimes you have to go with the slapdash. Okay, we're going to grab these disparate elements and slam them all together and see what we get approach, as opposed to this is going to be perfect. This is going to be perfect. And if it isn't perfect, we'll fix it with CGI.
Bullshit.
Bullshit. Sometimes you got to let the crack show. That's where the fun can be had. I had a great time. This is 8.4 kids out of 10 for me. It's higher than it has any right to be, but I had such a good time, and I'm glad I watched it again and did the show. And thanks for Dennis for coming on. But it shouldn't be that high. It's not that good, but that's how much fun I had with it. That's my rating.
Some bonus points from you then.
Yeah, bonus points.
All right, very good. Well, let's have Brains Before Beauty. So, I guess that kind of ruins the moment here, doesn't it? Because Dennis, you'd go first either way. So, what's your number of kids and your final summary?
Just to sort of repeat some of the earlier stuff, I think the cast is great. The story is good. Again, the premise is good. The fact that you've got the ideas that you can think about. And I still strongly would say that at the end of the movie, you can decide it's a dream or not, but it's still an open question, which makes it, I would say it doesn't make it frustrating to me, but it makes it even that much more interesting. So I like that. The, you know, as Robert mentioned, some of the stuff's a little dated. The shoot 'em up stuff gets a little old after a while. And it is kind of interesting that in the far future, they haven't figured out a way to shoot out some bullets that aren't going to break the glass and destroy everything in this Martian colony. But that's that would be another issue. But I still liked it. It is a lot of fun, and it's a good popcorn movie. I give it 7.5 kids, although I'm not sure where that half kid really came from.
Looks like Quato.
Yeah. It's like was that like a Siamese kind of thing? Anyway. I like both of your guys' takes, and I'm glad that this one got brought up. This is a movie I hadn't seen probably since shortly after it came out. Probably, Robert, when we were hanging out watching HBO at your dad's house. And that's been a while, at least 25 years, something like that. So this, it's peak Arnold, and it's a smart movie with a great premise. And I do like, Dennis, you brought up, a number of times, the whole, it could have been a dream. And when it could have been a dream, I'm good with that. When it's like sort of like you could read it one way or read it another way. So then you can watch a movie and have one thing in mind and then see the movie a totally different way with the other thing in mind. What I don't like is the cheap, it was a dream at the end, where it just kind of like makes the whole movie pointless. But when it's sort of just alluded to, it could possibly be, I think that is really good. Arnold's acting, while probably improved versus some of his prior movies, is still not very good. And I think he plays a better, less talk, more action, commando predator style guy than what they ask him to do here, where they have that sort of, he has to have relationships with women and talk a bit and try to figure out plots and move along that way. But it's a fun movie. It has humor. It has gore. It's very Verhoeven. I like the concept. I like Philip K. Dick's work. So I enjoyed this and give it 7.5 kids to feed while I'm driving cab and with my mutant hand and turning against my mutant people and killing Quato to quell the rebellion and get to Blasio all the power he wants. All right. So, that was really good. So Dennis, thanks again for bringing that up, and we will have show notes page at lastnarratives.com/189 with your prior appearances as well. And we welcome you back in the near future to do any number of those movies on your list that you sent earlier, something like a dozen movies. And I think we talked about a few other ones as well. So we might get you on more frequently, especially after you retire.
Well, it'd be my pleasure.
Yeah, that'd be great. And so, Dennis, I know one of your prior movies with us was Conspiracy, where we talked about Nazis, World War II, planning their final solution. And I thought that was going to be a difficult movie to talk about without getting like deplatformed and in trouble for some reason. Well, this next movie we're doing, I'm even more concerned about, because we're going to be doing the Edward Norton movie with Ed Furlong, American History X, with Nick White of the Status Quo podcast. So this is a guy who's been a fan of our show for a while. He has a really good show. He's a co-host as well. And he suggested doing American History X. So that will be what we're doing next. Robert, your initial take on that? That's a controversial film.
It's going to be fun. That is just a fun movie. Laugh out loud, hilarious movie.
Very uplifting.
Yes. It's a tearjerker. I think doesn't it in the end he turn away from?
Yeah.
Like it's about him leaving the neo-Nazis, right?
Yeah. There's a redemptive arc he tries to prevent his younger brother from following in his footsteps and making the mistakes that he had made.
Right. Yeah. He's like the older Klansman, and he's like, you don't want to do this, Edward Furlong. It's not worth it. And so he's like a killjoy. I want to say like Edward Furlong goes to like a party and he's like, no. He pulls him away from the party. And then he has to like get beat up by some skinhead. I don't know. Anyway, it'll be fun.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I always remember the curb stomp scene and just how terrible that it was. I mean, stuck with me.
That's absolutely brutal. Because it's like he curb stomps somebody for like stealing his car stereo or something, right?
Right. Yeah. And it's after like he's thwarted the attempt, right? So it was purely just Retribution.
Punish. Yeah.
Punish. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. So anyway, get to watch that again. So that'll be fun. But anyway,
it'll be a good times.
American History next week. And you can find show notes more for this at lastnarrative.com/189 for prior appearances with Dennis. And it will be back next week. So we'll say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, a couple more minutes on the Actual Anarchy podcast, but not a whole lot more. I've been trying to shorten our show, at least in my head, it works, but it hasn't actually worked in reality. Our last show was over an hour and 40 minutes, and we're already at an hour and 20. I don't know. Once we start talking, it just kind of keeps on going. Stretch it out, caramello style, as my wife would sing to me. Anyway, there was a question I had, and I think this would be directed towards Dennis. Philip K. Dick, he wrote a number of stories and novels, and many have been turned into television shows and movies and things of that nature. There's a movie, or sorry, an episode of Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams that I saw recently, and it was about Robert. I think I sent you the synopsis for it, so I'll have to put it on the show notes page for this episode, but there are basically like these bubble cities where there are like, it's like a vaccine passport system where you have to be cleared to go into these areas. And then people who live outside of it are in these rural areas who have to live in a very rustic lifestyle, and they're not permitted to come into the cities. And this woman and daughter come into the city and pass through this thing. And then there's this like social media connected bracelet system that is sort of like a smartphone, but on steroids, and it talks to you. And it's like a Siri/supercomputer type thing. Anyway, it's really, really interesting. And, but it also is very frighteningly dystopian. And I don't know if you're familiar, Dennis, I'm getting to the question, I swear, that Philip K. Dick gave a dystopian talk in Metz, France, at a sci-fi convention, like in 1979. And there was a movie called Prophecy that's like conspiracy theory type thing. And it's available on Amazon Prime. My wife and I watched it based on a recommendation of someone. And they intersperse Philip K. Dick's Metz speech with biblical revelation type stuff from a preacher. And I just thought it was like so fascinating. But are you familiar with this Metz speech? It's available on YouTube. I think it's about an hour long. It's entitled, "If You Find This World Bad, You Should See Some of the Others," where he's calling upon like some of the dystopian worlds that he had developed in his stories.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the speech, but it's interesting, and I'll try and look it up. I did watch some kind of like a biography about him some time ago, but I can't remember, you know, where it was connected up, and, you know, went into a lot of his personal problems and trials and tribulations and his own. I mean, I guess he was sort of like the John Nash guy. It just felt like there were these conspiracies all around him, and that really manifests itself in his work.
Yeah. I think they mentioned some of that he was in the Metz speech. It was totally unexpected in a way, because he was presenting it almost as if these things were happening to him and that he was being persecuted. But anyway, it was really interesting. So I'll find the link to not only that Metz speech, but also the Prophecy movie, and put it on the show notes page. And I'll send it to you individually before that as well, because this won't come out for a few days.
I put a link there to Wikipedia, which has a nice list of all his adapted works, either in movies or on TV. And there's reference to the Electric Dreams series that you mentioned, which is really a great series. I hope they continue. It's been a couple of years, but I thought the series was really well done.
Yeah. So you've seen all of them. There's like 10 or 12 individual, like they're all encapsulated like stories unto themselves, episodic, I guess, or the opposite of episodic, self-contained, right? Like,
no, they are episodic.
You're meeting new characters every time.
Yeah, they're not serial.
Yeah,
they're episodic, but they also tend to stay truer to the source. And one of the things that one of the things I liked about that series is that I would watch the show, and then I would go and look up the original story and read it and see how different it was or how much the same it was.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I remember harkening back to when we were hanging out at your dad's house, Robert. Your dad had a Philip K. Dick book laying out. And of course, in my juvenile humor, I found it funny because it was called The Breast.
Classic.
And I didn't read it, but I think the premise was it's a guy who turns into a breast. Something like that.
Okay. Could be. Never heard of it, but right on.
Yeah. Ask the old man about it.
I'm sure he remembers. Yeah, vividly.
Anyway, so Dennis, again, a lot of fun. And if you can stick around for just a bit longer, we have the Kathleen Turner Overdrive available for the Patreon supporters, of which you are one. So thank you also for that support. It give us some indication to continue doing what we're doing.
And, so I'm sure it'll come back to haunt me sometime.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're funding extremism or something. I don't know.
I'll get canceled.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of self-canceling in May. So
yes.
Yeah. Anyway, find the show notes and more for this one at actualanarchy.com/246. And we'll see you guys all next week for American History X with Nick White of The Status Quo. And with that, we'll say maximum freedom, everyone. Peace out and have a good night.
The Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the Chipmunks, guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, 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 doot.